And right now, I'm very happy to welcome back to our show Christopher Viles, Director of American Studies at the University of Connecticut and author of the book Haunted by Hitler, Liberals, the Left, and the Fight Against Fascism in the United States. Christopher Viles, great to have you back on our show again. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me on again, Scott.
So what brings us together tonight is obviously the tragic events of Charlottesville, Virginia, the death of a woman there, as well as the injuries of nearly 20 others. There were a lot of instances of violence and beatings that took place surrounding this so-called Unite the Right rally at a Confederate memorial in Charlottesville. And Professor Viles, as you took in all the tragedy of that weekend, couple weekends ago, I'm just wondering, what were some of your reactions to the violence, the death of Heather Heyer, and just the spewing of hate that came out of that that particular rally and organizing of these far-right groups?
I mean, I think, you know, like most people, I was, you know, angry and disgusted and also really following Trump's remarks, a little bit afraid, you know, that this was being normalized and neo-Nazis were becoming normalized. So, I mean, I think I was probably like the majority of Americans in that sense. But, you know, also my reaction, too, once I kind of, you know, like got back to my notes and got back to thinking about this a little bit more is, you know, this is new and it's not new. You know, the, you know, quote unquote, you know, fascists and anti-fascists have been clashing on the streets in the United States since the 1920s, first within Italian American neighborhoods and then more broadly in various forms or another. But I think what was kind of unnerving about this was, first of all, just the scale of the street battles. That's pretty rare. I mean, you don't usually see that many contending forces between those two really diametrically opposed currents going at it like that on the streets. And, you know, there's been bloody clashes between those two groups before, bloodier than this one. But at the same time, I can also think of another time when a single right-wing person at a rally injured or killed that many people just in one fell swoop. But again, what makes this different from all the clashes in the past, you would have to go back to Calvin Coolidge in the 1920s for a president who actually equivocated or failed to distance himself from fascist currents or neo-fascist currents in the United States. Ever since FDR, every U.S. president, Republican or Democrat, has been unequivocally distanced from fascist currents in the United States. And, you know, as I've said on the show before, we've had those fascist currents in the United States ever since the 1920s, and many of them have actually proven very influential in American life and even shaped American institutions.
Thank you for that, Christopher. I wanted to ask you a bit about Donald Trump's very erratic response. Initially, it seemed that he was speaking from his gut and ingratiating himself, or at least going out of his way to provide some cover for these extremist groups, the KKK, Nazis, other white supremacist groups who gathered there in Charlottesville. The next day he was more scripted and specifically called out these groups. And then the day after that, he was back to praising some of these participants in this far-right rally as fine people, quote-unquote. What kind of impact do you think the president's comments have had on these far-right groups across the country?
Oh, yeah, no, it's I mean, I guess time will tell, but my guess is that it's going to it does give them a degree of legitimacy. I mean, I think that I started to get a little bit more worried, and actually considerably more worried, not even so much about, I mean, Trump's comments for starters, but also polls showing most Republican voters' reactions to them. I mean, you probably saw these too. Well, the CBS poll that 66% of Republican voters thought that he handled that situation correctly, and then another earlier poll that said a slim majority of Republicans would be okay with him delaying the 2020 election until he got this whole illegal alien thing sorted out. You know, and so what those kind of suggest, I mean, it does suggest that some fairly deep authoritarian tendencies in part of the electorate, you know, that does have me worried, and beyond Trump. So, I mean, I think what you're saying is, you know, when Trump kind of equivocates, that equivocation is who he is. He equivocates because he knows that deep down those people defending those monuments are on some level on the same page as he is, which is why they responded so nicely to his presidency. Usually these kind of far-right militia groups or hate groups or whatever you want to call them, neo-Nazis, usually they stay out of mainstream American politics, Democrat and Republican, and didn't say a pox on both your houses. They've actually been excited by his presidency because they know he speaks their language. The way he speaks about immigrants, the way he speaks about people of color, is in line with their way of thinking. He manages to racialize even climate change, you know, calling it like it's a, you know, the Chinese have kind of stuck it to us in these agreements. And so, yeah, I mean, he's giving this legitimacy, but I think the important thing to note here too is that you're going to see, I think, in the coming years, as we saw in Boston, the other side, whether they rally under the banner of Antifa or counter-protesters or what have you, that side is going to be seriously geared up for quite a long time. And there's all kinds of indications on the ground that side is going into absolute high gear right now.
And what is the long-term danger of the fact that you have white supremacist groups, Nazis, KKK, and the like, working so out in the open and seemingly not very afraid of the consequences? What is the concern that you have about these folks now very energized and very out in the open in terms of recruiting new members across the country?
I mean, I think, you know, I think they're out in the open and they're not. I mean, there's been a lot of reports lately about photos that have circulated about some of these neo-Nazis and these rallies, and, you know, they've lost their jobs and, you know, they've been hounded and all these other kind of things. So I wouldn't be surprised if they go back to wearing masks or hoods or what have you, like their forebears in the KKK once did. They might have, you know, jumped the gun on that a little bit. So, you know, there is a sign that there's, you know, what they're doing is not okay. But, you know, I think what you're starting to see, and I've seen this even a little bit at UConn on the college campuses, you know, young conservatives, like young people on the left, have been oftentimes, you know, had the zeal of the recently converted, right? And, you know, and state their cases very vociferously and all these other things. But what you're starting to see amongst a subgroup of younger people, you know, is this like an open embrace of fascism, an open embrace of white supremacy, or, you know, well, like this group, the Proud Boys, says like Western chauvinism. You know, you're getting a little bit more of that openly. They seem to be actually toying around with fascism. And that's something that they used to not really do. I mean, I've seen campus conservatives for a long time. They're usually, you know, fairly libertarian or free market or, you know, Christian right or, you know, something. I mean, these are, you know, can be, in my mind, deeply problematic currents, but they haven't toyed around with this. And so there does seem to be a cultural shift going on, that be that as it may. I mean, as what I've observed, most younger people have been polarized in the other direction towards the left. you know, and for every one of those toying around with fascism, there's probably three or four toying around with the word socialism, especially after the Bernie Sanders campaign. So, you know, you are seeing this kind of deep structural polarization. And again, and I'm not the first one, or nor am I really going out on a limb to say that.
We're speaking with Christopher Viles, Director of American Studies at the University of Connecticut. He's author of the book, Haunted by Hitler, Liberals, the Left, and the Fight Against Fascism in the U.S. Christopher, I wanted to run down some of the groups whose names may be new for some of our listeners that have been gathering under this white supremacist or white nationalist flag of late. And that includes groups like Vanguard America, Identity Europa, the Proud Boys, the Traditional Workers Party is another one. Is there anything new about these groups, or are they just really the same old kind of folks spewing the same ideology under a new name?
They're new in recent history. I mean, I think in the sense that they're, a lot of these groups are middle class, especially the Proud Boys and Identity Europa, and a lot of Richard Spencer's followers too, and they actively distance themselves sometimes from the KKK because they just see those groups as kind of redneck or what have you, but in doing so, like, American fascism has discovered its historical roots in the sense that historically, especially in the 20s, 30s, 40s, in Europe as well as in the United States, fascism was always a middle-class movement, and there's various reasons for that. But, you know, in more recent decades, it's had a more kind of blue-collar, working-class edge. They're kind of reclaiming that, you know, and in a sense, I think for some of these groups like Identity Europa and Richard Spencer's thing, they have this notion that, okay, well, African Americans have their cultural identity. Latinos are allowed to express their cultural identity. So why can't we express our cultural identity? And that, for some reason, means that you get to express kind of, you know, fascist or neo-Nazi views, or in the case of the Proud Boys, just very supremacist views. And it's also important just to realize that not all of these groups are exactly the same. Like the quote-unquote Proud Boys, that's another phenomenon that's fairly new, and I haven't seen it like anything like that before, where, you know, these are kind of hipsters, right? Young hipsters that are sometimes called alt-light rather than alt-right, in the sense that they reject Spencer and overt white supremacy, but they will embrace a lighter form of it. They'll just exalt the superiority at all times of Western culture, which is a very intolerant and very offensive position in a different way. There's different strands of this right wing, this new kind of right wing formation. But again, I guess the newness of it in certain ways and the oldness is the fact that it's middle class and explicitly middle class, which, you know, again, rejects the immediate past and breaks from the immediate past and the history of these movements, but goes back to form for the earlier incarnations of it.
Thanks for that. Now, these various right-wing groups have a history of deep-seated conflict with one another over ideology, over tactics, over just, you know, spats between individuals. But it seems like, as of late, they've come together in this unity, as the name of their rally in Charlottesville indicated. Are they coming together, as they say, or is this just a little temporary truce?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they are. I mean, I guess, you know, time will tell. I mean, you've already got, you know, Bannon leaving the White House and starting kind of a rival, Trump movement there. Not even Trump movement, but he's kind of turned on Trump and is putting forward his own economic nationalism and white nationalism his own ways, and then calling y'all right a bunch of buffoons. But, you know, even if they're not actually marching under the same banner, I mean, I could look to the history of the left and, you know, say, okay, at any moment in history, the left was split into a bunch of different groups, some of which hated each other. But that's also a sign that the left in general was strong, because there was a lot of people drawn to it, so many that they, you know, went off into different cliques, and you had a proliferation of organizations, basically, because so many people were drawn to the ideology. And so, you know, they might very well be, I don't think they're united right now, but I'm not sure if that exactly matters. They can do a lot of damage as a bunch of autonomous groups that are moving in roughly the same direction.
Now, I wanted to check in with you regarding the Republican Party and its relationship with some of these groups and individuals on the far right. I was just reading an article today about one of these far-right leaders, Augustus Saul Invictus, he calls himself, is planning to run for the U.S. Senate in the state of Florida. And, of course, there's the history of other far-right activists like David Duke, who ran for the U.S. Senate in Louisiana, and I believe he actually ran on the Republican ticket there. From your research, what is the relationship between the Republicans and these extremist white supremacist groups?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, and it's a tough question as well. I mean, I think they find themselves on the same page. I mean, I think you have to really go back and ask an even more philosophical question of what do left and right actually mean? What are the basis of those? And it's something far deeper than a belief in big government or small government. You know, there's been some writing within political science on this and political philosophy, particularly in Europe, that kind of what draws someone to the left in general. You know, if people to the left or left of center, according to one Italian political philosopher, Umberto Bobbio, people to the left of center believe that people are more equal than unequal, and people to the right of center believe that people are more unequal than equal, right? And there's various degrees of that. But I think what you do see, I think, as you move to the right side of the spectrum, is that there is a belief in social hierarchy, right? And as if you move to the left, as you move further and further to the left, there's more and more of a belief in kind of radical equality, right? And so, you know, if somebody, you know, it's interesting and telling that a lot of the people who have gravitated to Spencer's movement, according to Spencer himself, are former libertarians, right? These are people in some ways that you would think would have no kind of truck with something like neo-Nazism. But at the same time, I think it's really about their belief and really the belief in social hierarchy, and that some groups naturally have more control over other groups, or certain individuals need to have more control over other individuals, you know, for society to run smoothly. And ultimately, I think that's the deep structure of thought that finds them on the same side of history, even though they might not, you know, agree on a lot of things. I mean, but it is also important to note in that relationship, say, between the Republican Party and these more extremist currents. If you go back to the history of fascism in Europe, what most historians will tell you is that even though, say, for example, you know, the equivalent of Paul Ryan or the equivalent of the Koch brothers were not the main kind of base of fascism. Fascism was middle class. The elites sided with it, but they weren't its kind of rabid base. Nonetheless, without that elite enablement, without that enablement of traditional conservatives, fascism could have never have taken place. It could have never have taken power. There's a very direct enablement between elites and between you know, traditional conservatives and fascist movements, because they both found themselves in a common cause against the left and against socialist parties.
And an overlap, if not in specific ideology, then at least in sentiment and the rhetoric that surrounds their politics.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Christopher Viles, just one last topic we could squeeze in here, and that is the grouping of left activists known as Antifa were present in Charlottesville, and they've been present at a lot of rallies and protest actions across the country of late. But there's a long history for groups that call themselves Antifa, going back to the early part of last century. Tell us a bit about Antifa, where it came from, and the relationship between groups we see active today and those that organized Antifa back 70, 80, 100 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really telling sign of the time that word is actually becoming a household word in the United States, which I really never thought I would see. Because when I first started writing even my book, I was talking about anti-fascism, and people were kind of confused about what that meant exactly. But the first time I heard that word, I was in Germany in the 90s, and it seemed to be everybody knew what it was. They called it Antifa there, and that's usually what I call it. That. I'm not sure how even it translates into English, but it comes from Germany, basically. And again, it was a household word there that was associated with a certain kind of punk rock anarchist squatter movement of basically street fighter kids who would get into fights with neo-Nazis, right? But the roots of the term, that group that in the 80s and 90s in Germany that resurrected Antifa, there was an original Antifa that dated to 1945, 1946 in Germany within all the occupied zones, east and west. And what the original Antifa was a coalition of social democrats, socialists, and even some communists who basically came together for a variety of reasons. First, to provide kind of social services within the rubble of bombed out Germany, but also to kind of hunt down and get into battles with underground Nazi organizations called werewolves that were still these underground Nazi partisans of SS folks. And so they would actually actively hunt these folks down. And they allied authorities in all the various occupied zones shut that down. But it had you'll see these Antifa flags with this black and red flag, and sometimes it'll say anti-fascist action. There was the original German was antifascistische Aktion, and that was the German version of that from 45-46. It was resurrected directly by the anarchists and the punks in the 80s and 90s, and then interestingly, came to the United States, and it's been in the United States since that time. Since really, you could start to see it here really in the 1990s, and also to an extent in the late 80s. And the spirit of it was similar here. It was kind of alternative youth in the United States who would also get into fights with Nazis and Klan folk. But now, especially since Charlottesville, that group, it's still a very small part of the protest movement. That's become a household word, and it's gotten a lot of attention. But I do want to stress that's when you're thinking about Charlottesville, or you're thinking about Boston, the people who would self-identify as Antifa are a very small percentage of the protesters who show up. But that might be changing, and that might be growing quite a bit.
Yeah, so you see indications that with the rise of the right, you're going to see a commensurate rise on the left of groups like Antifa, possibly.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a reason for that, too. I mean, it's because the president's not denouncing it. I mean, people, take to the streets. In a civilized society, the state or the police are supposed to have the monopoly on violence, the monopoly on force. But what you see historically, when groups feel as if the state does not have their back, the authorities do not have their back, they start arming themselves on their own, and it's a very unhealthy situation. But if the president is not going to take leadership, you're going to see, if people feel threatened, you're going to see more and more of that.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Christopher Viles, thanks for spending time and your expertise and analysis here of what's going on in this country with the rise of the right and increased polarization across the board. Thanks so much, and we'll look forward to talking again in the near future. I hope to get you back here, so thanks.
Okay, thanks so much for having me on.
Appreciate it. Take care. Good night, Christopher.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
That's Christopher Viles, Director of American Studies at the University of Connecticut and author of the book Haunted by Hitler, Liberals, the Left, and the Fight Against Fascism in the U.S.